There they are there. So you can see that using the soccer field, the new pond, and the big pasture, the combination of those, you know, exceeds the distance of 1,280 feet that would be necessary for the safety zone. What's not shown on there is the area that's that would be south of the big pasture. We call that the dry lot. It's a dirt lot, but there are some trees in there. And so the arena, also obviously there's no trees. And so a lot of the area surrounding our safety zone is also maintained, or it's, you know, pasture land that's down to the dirt. And so again, another buffer around our safety zone, which in one of the appendixes that I gave you today, there was some comments in there that by maintaining the area around your safety zone as well, you can decrease the size needed for your safety zone as well. I also wanted to point out the benefits to the community. You know, so the secondary access road is going to be maintained to 4290 standards. It's available to our neighbors on Patterson Creek Road and Valley Pines, kind of coming up over that way. Obviously, to our friends on South Cater Creek Road as well, if there was an emergency. It's also going to be maintained as a shaded fuel break. It's going to be along our eastern border all the way to Patterson Creek Road. So there's already been some significant work done there by our neighbors over the last couple of years, and we will maintain that you know, to that standard and work with CAL FIRE each year. There's also will be a water source for firefighting in the new pond. Obviously, the existing pond has been used in the past for some firefighting needs, but the new pond would be an additional water source that could be used for fighting fire as well. We have good and proactive forest management through implementation of our CFIT program. We do yearly maintenance through our volunteers and staff on Kidder Creek Camp property, which is also a benefit to our neighbors by creating fuel breaks above them. So in conclusion, when taking into account the simulations of fire behavior, including those worst case scenarios, again, that's 2 to 4 hours is the very worst case scenario that we saw with that fire starting at Greenview, which did not take into account any suppression. So when we add suppression, we increase that time that we have to get everybody out of there safely. Fuel break areas surrounding camp and ongoing forest management, we're committed to that as we have a forest management plan that has been developed by Dan, and he is pursuing that with us. We have a robust evacuation plan that has been reviewed, and we have the safety zone space if needed. Our conclusion and the conclusion of both CAL FIRE and Siskiyou County Office of Emergency Services is that we exceed the requirements of 4290, or we will once the new road is in. They have reviewed and provided feedback and agree that we have an adequate emergency evacuation plan. Thank you, and I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Rick?
I guess this is for CAL FIRE. Since you brought up the IRPG, which I'm very familiar with.
Yeah.
CAL FIRE believes those are safety zones from the standpoint that the IRPG demands that there be no flammable material in that safety zone. And what we're assuming here is that the fire is coming from one direction. For that calculation we did. And the IRPG is designed for professional firefighters with PPE and communication, none of which these campers will have. So I bring it up because I don't want a false hope here. Because quite frankly, I don't believe you're going to survive a fire in what you call a safety zone.
Jake Burgess, CAL FIRE Siskiyou. Just to speak to your point, I do agree it is, the intent is not for them to have a safety zone. It's a starting point for what I would refer to as a temporary refuge. It's a starting point for them to be able to maintain an amount of time till we can get resources in to help protect them. It's not designed to be a true safety zone in the sense of the firewall. That was just a starting point, as well as fuel treatment around that area.
I would agree there could be a collection point. Safety zone brings a whole other conversation in my professional brain.
Yep.
That just doesn't fit the fire plan. The other piece I look at too is, you know, your evacuation is predicated on multiple trips with buses. You're not going to be able to do that. With all the residents in the area that are also trying to get out on those same roads and in the fire environment, the traffic alone is going to prevent you from going back in to get another busload of kids.
Actually, the plan does not use buses other than once we get to the Hasty evacuation location. So if we're not using the church, at that location we would use buses to transport people. So we're using vans, Yukons, trucks, vehicles of that nature to get everybody off-site.
So you have enough vehicles to move the entire occupancy in one shot?
Not in one shot. No, we have two to three shots.
That's what I'm getting.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah, just one further point of clarification. For us, a safety zone, the intent is that we don't need any PPE or fire shelters.
Exactly.
It
should be described as someone sitting in a lawn chair with their sunglasses on being able to survive the fire.
Correct.
It's probably near possible.
Well, somebody's guessing.
And just to be clear, you know, the intent is that we would never have to use that, right? But it is there just in case we need it.
I can't make a decision on the intent, Andy, mm-hmm. Because I don't want a mass casualty like that.
And neither do we.
I like the comment when.
Yes.
Not if.
Right.
And that's the appropriate way of viewing it. Mm-hmm. In regards to vegetation meetings, in the paper, where the dates will be done originally. Is there also a schedule plan for continuance of the maintenance of vegetation?
Yeah, as I said, we do regular and continued maintenance through volunteer groups as well as our staff that are on site each year. And then the forest management plan was developed with Dan. Obviously, there's a five-year plan there, but the idea would be that we would continue to pursue, you know, those CFIP grants and monies to continue to do forest management.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, trying to think of a way of saying it without saying it. But when it hits, when it happens, and I know you were in the presentation, which is here, you do what the SO said or the IC commander or
yes.
Whatever they say. Is there calculations in there for when it happens? That's, of course, the young deputy is overwhelmed by the stress there. Even a seasoned IC person handling that, mm-hmm. a great deal on their mind. Is there availability in there for decisions made by Peter Crick, hasty places to go drop off on, to where it's not communication overwhelming the IC
right.
or communication overwhelming, you know, the young deputy taking everything in a mess of them, but initiative by your own department or by your own Peter Crick to just identify
yes.
yourself where you're going to go to.
Yeah, we have discussed that some with them, where we would go. One of the ideas, there's a big clearing at the end of the road. So it's just a 2 mile down, 2 mile back turn around to get everybody down there. Other location that would be close and be kind of more of a public space would be Mean Jeans gas station right there on Highway 3,
right.
where you know there's a big space kind of back behind there where we could drop off and do a quick turnaround. So those are just a couple of ideas that we've talked about, chatted about. But obviously, if they're able to make the decision, we would go where they would say.
Absolutely.
But if while we're not able to get a hold of them and we can see that we need to make a decision, then yes, we would make that decision at that time.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm just worried, not overwhelming emergency services,
mm-hmm.
the stuff they already have on their plate.
Yeah.
With that, would there be frequent, I'll use the phrase, tabletop exercises with relevant folks to keep the plan in place? Because we talk about it now,
right.
and then 3 years from now, this life moves on and
Yes, it'll be part of our, it is, has been, a part of our training every year leading up to this time, and it'll continue to be, and making that more robust even, to do some actual drills. Our campers do drills when they arrive at camp. They talk about emergency, hey, what's going to happen if the alarms go off, what are we doing? So they're made aware at the beginning of each week of camp, as well as our staff are going through that during staff training at the beginning of the season.
All right. Actually, another thing I was coming to was the children.
Yeah.
Of course. No. What's the age range of the kids there?
Typically, it's second grade. We do have some first graders there, but typically our overnight camps are going to be second grade and older.
Okay.
And that would include our family camps, just because of the nature of the way that we do camp. We're doing rafting and hiking, and so kind of that age group, kind of lends itself better to those 7 to 8 year olds.
Second grade to 18 years?
What's that?
Is it second grade to 18?
Typically, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually we kind of scale down around 15 or 16.
Right.
But yeah, so the typical age range would be second grade up through a super senior, which would be a senior who just graduated high school.
All right. Yeah. That's what I was thinking of too, is how you would incorporate the kids into the trainings and, mm-hmm. of course, just learning experiences for them as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that comes to mind is the, see the year back there, I'll talk a little louder, sir. One thing I see too is the Challenger accident, the incident that happened. Everything's going to be all right, everything's going to be all right, everything's going to be all right, and then it eventually it happens. And so that constant training and constant vigilance on it is absolutely necessary.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a part of what we're doing every year. And then as you know, as we go into the summer, right, in June, not as high of a risk of fire danger, but once we get into late July and early August, obviously we're kind of being more mindful and ready. Just as Mr. Shinoni was saying, we're kind of on pins, right? They're waiting to see what's going to happen, but we're also just kind of keeping an eye out more so once we get into that fire season. So.
And then I've never been a marketer or anything like that, but from a marketing standpoint, is it something that Carrot Creek would, you know, market when you're fire safe or in certain conditions, people would evacuate? It's also a market.
Yeah, if people asked, we would certainly, you know, be willing to share what is our plan. We don't have our emergency plan posted on our website, but if somebody asks, we'd certainly be willing to share that with them. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Supervisor Urban?
Sure. sorry. One of the things that comes to my mind is when you talk about your adult campers that come in with vehicles, motorhomes, that kind of thing. Kids don't tend to panic as much. They're easier to herd, mm-hmm. kind of like cats. But adults get a little bit more frantic when it's time to leave,
mm-hmm.
especially when fire's involved. Do you spend a little bit more time with your evacuation plan with the adults who have motorhomes and things like that? Do you have a plan for that? Because they're the ones that are going to be harder to convince.
So in, you know, currently we have one RV park right now, and that's used by our volunteers. We have a few people there that, you know, 5 to 8 RVs that are there typically on a given week that are there part of, you know, serving and volunteering or on staff. In our future plan, as I mentioned, 220 of those would be people that have their own vehicles on site. One of those RV parks would be one that we would want to designate as our family adventure camp, right? We're talking about 10 to 12 sites in that RV, and that would be, you know, approximately 60 people with 10 to 12 vehicles. Of those sites, our plan would be to have our own RVs that we would kind of have in there and they could rent out for. So those wouldn't be going anywhere. They would be going in their own vehicles. So we're only talking about, you know, maybe 10 to 12 RVs, people that are living, you know, kind of staying, working, in addition to, you know, if we have 8 of our own RVs that they can rent out, well, then there's another additional 4 sites that they could be tent camping or, you know, in an RV, and then they would be, you know, in addition to the 8 to 10 that are volunteering. So we're talking about 10 to 12 RVs. So it's a small part of the plan. And, you know, it's part of that plan where we have, at the RV sites, we have emergency procedures posted currently, what they need to do if there is an emergency.
Yeah, that would be quite a fire drill.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I would suggest a lot of training involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That might be interesting. As far as the Patterson Creek exit, you have an easement in place there?
We do.
And is that a constant open access?
There will be a locked breakaway gate on that on the property there. So it is privately owned property there, and we have an emergency access agreement with them. So it's not just hey, whenever we want to use it, it's for emergency only. And so we do have the easement for emergency. It'll have a locked breakaway gate that would you know, meet the standards that we've communicated with, I think it's a breakaway chain, or some other ideas that CAL FIRE or Forest Service or whoever it is that we would be consulting with for that breakaway gate, that would be in place.
So there's never a time that will be locked, so you have no access.
That's correct.
And then my last question is kind of, might be for you, might be for Haley. With that use zone of the recreational facility private. You mentioned that nobody can be denied access with that connotation.
The recreation facility commercial, the second one?
You said recreational facility private.
So recreational facility private, folks could be denied, right? So in the example of Kidder Creek, you apply,
right,
and then you get let in or you don't.
So my question is, has anybody ever been denied
access?
Yes. Not typically for our camp programs, because, you know, a seven-year-old wants to come to camp, we're not going to deny that person. We're actually going to take steps to try to help get them to camp. But when it comes, you know, our nonprofit status is as a religious organization. So we have had some groups that have wanted to come that don't share our religion. And we've said, I'm sorry, we're not able to serve you.
So then you can be considered as private that way. So that's how.
I mean, those are, I wasn't aware of that designation at that time, but yes, that has been the case.
So then that
yes.
fits you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
So, thank you for the information.
Mm-hmm.
Cell phones. I heard you use cell phones and an app to notify.
Yes.
I don't know about, what about radios? Because
mm-hmm.
cell phones are going to, you know, they're going to fail.
Yeah.
So what's the plan there?
So we have radios on site as well
mm-hmm.
that we use for communicating back and forth between vehicle traffic. It's not super robust at this time, but it's ample for what we have going on right now. So we do have radios on site that can be used in an emergency situation.
Is that something you're willing to
yes.
become more adequate with the increase in occupancy?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's, you know, I think with anything, we've been willing to work with CAL FIRE and Office of Emergency Services. If they've said, hey, we think you should do this, then we have done it. We've implemented it. And that's our commitment. Our commitment is to keep kids safe. We want kids to come to camp. They need it. As we were hearing about from our probation officer, you know, camp is one of those things that's good for kids that's going to help keep them out of probation, right? And so we want kids to be able to be safe. We want kids to come to camp. And so, yes, absolutely, you know, we're willing to do what is necessary to make sure that kids can come and that they're safe when they're there.
I heard you, I think, mention some type of drill when new
mm-hmm.
campers come in. Is there an evacuation drill, or is it fire, or is it just
an
awareness drill?
It's an awareness drill where they sound the alarm and they talk about, hey, if we're meeting, this is our program area, we're meeting up as a cabin, and we're going to this location. With our summer staff, that will be an actual drill. So our counselors, they'll have an awareness where we've actually practiced those things, put them into place. But with the campers, it's an awareness drill where we kind of talk through that. We sound the alarm. That way it's not something that's going to panic them.
Is it something like on a cruise ship where you go through the exercise?
It's during our camp orientation.
Okay.
Welcome to camp. Hey,
okay.
It's going to be awesome. Here's three safety things that we want you to be aware of. One of those is fire drill.
And is there a reason, it's kind of interesting that you don't have your emergency plan on your website, but I would think that would be a major plus.
We certainly could put it on there. I don't recall that I've ever gotten a phone call from a parent asking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then, so if I'm not mistaken, there really isn't a safety zone. I think we've determined that.
Not according to the, you know, firefighter standards, that's correct.
Okay.
As, you know, as we talked about, it's where we're going,
mm-hmm.
That we're staying there. If, you know, that way we're not walking. You know, one of the ideas that came up was, you know, what about the E plan? I don't know, the Enigma plan, right? What if we started walking out towards the creek or something like that? And they said, no, we don't want you doing that. Stay there. That way we know where you are. We know where to send the resources. So it is not a safety zone in the standard of a firefighter,
mm-hmm.
But it is a zone where we can go and where resources can be sent to help keep the camper safe.
So I guess the connotation might reflect a different name
yes.
than just a safety zone.
Yeah.
And I guess lastly, what's the interaction that you anticipate between fire responders and evacuation and with the residents that are in there as well? I kind of tend to agree with Supervisor Howe. You're only going to get one chance out. I you know, getting back in a panic might be near impossible.
My response to that would be that Office of Emergency Services and CAL FIRE have said, hey, that sounds like a good plan. And so if they know that those are our vehicles that we need to get the kids out, I think they're going to take steps to try to help get those vehicles in there. I mean, that would be my response.
And I'm just talking about the interaction.
Yeah.
I get it. Best intent is always there, but it's a little different. And I'm reflecting on the mill fire in particular.
Yes.
Because that was as instantaneous as it could be. Mm-hmm. Bar any 2-hour window or 1-hour
right.
window, if nothing. Well, we see what happened.
Yes.
So I don't know if that could happen in this case. So I'm just trying to safeguard my decision on, you know, being able to sleep at night saying, you know, did we do the right thing or not?
Sure.
Because I know the mission of the project and what you've been doing is great. I don't qualm with that at all. I just want to be sure that whatever decision we make here today, that it will allow it to continue in a way that we don't have to look back and go, gee, what if we'd only done this?
Yeah, and my response to that would be, instead of a yes or no decision, what are mitigations that we could put in place that we are willing to do?
Understood.
You know, if you say, hey, well, we need to have on 95% days, you need to have vehicles there to get everybody out. Well, we'll make that happen, right? I mean, so instead of a yes or no, what are some mitigations that can be put in place to make sure that we can still get everybody out if we're not going to be able to get everybody out? You know, 3 trips, okay, not going to happen. Well, then what do we need to put in place? Do we need to get some of our staff, have some buses that sit on site, a couple staff get their CDL, and then we can get everybody out of there? We're certainly willing to look at some of those things instead of just a, hey, we're not doing this project because we don't feel safe. Yeah.
Can I assume kids would go first?
Yes, yeah. So I think in our emergency plan, it talks about high...
Who's the first one out?
Yeah.
The kids are going to go first.
Yes.
Okay. You want to go forward?
Yeah. Andy, I don't mean to be combative, but
yeah,
I'm serious with RP about this stuff. And I can't put you in my 50 years of firefighting head about how serious this is.
Yeah.
With that said, my job, I believe, is to do everything I can, as I did throughout my professional career, to mitigate risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm driving at,
mm-hmm.
is enough sufficient mitigation risks that, yeah, there's no perfect world. I understand that. But I also know with the fire modeling, you cannot model a human-dominated fire,
mm-hmm.
which is what we've been occurring, which is what we've been having. So your 2 hours may be much less than 2 hours, you know, on a 97th percentile day. That's why I keep honing in on this kind of a thing. And I also know that I've been in many situations in several turnovers with grown men that lock up, that are
mm-hmm.
professionally trained. Where they can't see 15, 20 feet in front of their face.
Right.
And it's a horrible place I'd ever want to put kids in, or
yeah.
even you,
right.
Tell you the truth. So whatever happens here today, I have to make sure that we have sufficient mitigations in place and that they're enforceable from
yeah.
a permit standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to get into a situation where I battled with J.H. Ranch for years over hazardous goods. And I don't want to put you in that position. I don't want to put the county in that position either.
Yeah.
And so that's why my focus so much on the hazards that face you with the county.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. Obviously, I don't have the knowledge that you have. I mean, you've seen things that I'll hopefully never see, right? And so again, I'll just reiterate that yes, we're open to those mitigations to be put in place to make sure that you all feel good about what, you know, a plan that can be put into effect as needed and when needed as we continue to grow.
Okay.
Do you have another follow-up, Supervisor?
So, what happens when you choose to leave? And
me? Personally?
Yeah.
I'm staying.
And I love you for that.
Yeah.
And someone else comes in and wants to change this planet. And what happens 15 or 20 years down the line when someone else comes in, or another management group comes in and wants to change this planet, and they decide to make it look different than what we've agreed to? And we don't have a way to manage that anymore.
Hopefully I'll be there for another 20 years.
Well, we hope so too.
But what specifically are you referring to? Is it the emergency plan or just the master site plan in general?
Well, you know, we sit here and listen to you and what your vision is,
mm-hmm.
and what you've worked so hard and your group has worked so hard to put together. And personally, I appreciate everything you've done, and I love you all for what you're trying to do and what your vision is. But I worry about the future of what could happen.
Mm-hmm.
In the fact that, you know, nothing stays stagnant. Nothing, you know, the vision that you have may not be the vision of what your predecessors, your successors, may have for that program.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't guess at what that might be. And we can't always make our decisions on the what-ifs in life. But 10 or 15 years down the line, that operation may change. And the decisions that we make today may totally be undermined down the road. And it may not be that long from now that may happen. And that doesn't fare well for us. And it's a tough decision for us to have to make, for me to have to make, not knowing what the future holds for you and for the children of the future.
Yes.
And not having any control over what Mother Nature may have in store for us this summer or next summer or the summer after that. So it's a tough decision. And we can put all the controls in place. We can manipulate you as much as we want. But in the end, you know, it's God's will. It's nature's will. It's a tough decision for us to have to make.
Yeah.
And we have to put our faith in you and your decisions right now, not knowing what the future holds.
I think two things come to mind. Mission drift, I think, is maybe what you're referring to. And are we going to stay true to our mission? I'd like to say yes, but it's hard to say, well, what's going to happen in 15 to 20 years? And I think that's the other question. As it relates to CEQA, you know, are we dealing in what ifs? Well, what if this happens, right? And my understanding is that CEQA doesn't deal with what ifs. It deals with baseline, and here's this year. This is what we're proposing. So we can't say, well, what if Mount Shasta blows its top, right? I mean, that's another example of a what if. Well, there might not be a camp in 10 or 15 years if that happens. So it's hard to say for sure. We're going to navigate just like every other camp in the country, try to make it work, try to reach out to kids and families to, you know, to carry out our mission. So is it going to look exactly what it looks like today? Most likely. It'll probably change a little bit. My hope and my prayer is that we would not lose sight of our mission. And I think if what you're referring to, I think there are guidelines in place, and that's why we're doing this process. Otherwise, we could have just gone out and started building stuff and having more campers, right? So my understanding is that this process is laying out, this is the 20-year plan, and there is not wiggle room. Oh, well, we decided we want to build 20 cabins instead of 11. We can't, is my understanding. And so I would say that that is the safety guideline. Whether I'm there or not, we have to go and get building permits for any new cabins, and the county is going to look at our master site plan and say, well, looks like you already built 11. You can't build anymore. And I think that's the safety guideline that's in place for what we can and what we can't do, looking 20, 30 years down the road as we navigate. And as I'm sure things will change a little bit, but we stay committed to our mission.
Well, it's good to hear you say that.
So, Mr. Chris, any follow-up?
Not for Ms. Handy. Thank you.
Anyone else? Just a quick
one.
Michael?
Do you have any firefighting equipment on site currently?
No.
Yeah, I mean, you have a pond. Do you have?
Yeah, we have a pond, and we have a fire hydrant next to the pond.
You do?
We
okay.
do.
Okay.
The plan does call for more hydrants, and, you know, I forget who was saying that today, but as buildings are developed, there's new codes, so they're going to have sprinkler systems, et cetera, et cetera. As those things are built, they're going to be built to the permits that are needed at that time. But again, we are not the firefighters.
No, I'm just thinking of you're there, and help is minutes away, but yet there's something.
I've got a McLeod.
Huh?
I've got a McLeod. I think the forest management is the key thing that we are engaging in. To make sure that our property is in a place where that it can handle if a fire is coming in, it's going to lessen the impact of that fire. So we're committed to that. And then our second commitment is to getting the kids out of there. And then, you know, as they said, this, like, hey, get out of the way so we can do our jobs, right? I mean, that's our goal. We're not going to try to, you know, getting the hoses out. I mean, we can leave the sprinklers on and they'll do their job for a little while, which will certainly help. In the safety zone, but our intent is not to become firefighters. If you want me to be, as a mitigation, I've always wanted to.
Yeah, that isn't my intent. I'm just saying that there might be a situation where that availability would help keep those kids out. So.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be here all afternoon. So did we order lunch?
Yes.
Okay, so my intent is to go into closed session, do a working lunch. I would go, but we have plenty of public comment. Wendy deserves a lunch. Don't your hands need a little break there?
A little bit. I could use 5 minutes now if we could.
We'll go into the afternoon if we used to.
I know.
Unless you guys got a better alternative idea.
Sounds like that. Just to have a set time for the public to get back.
It's going
to
be 1:30. We're going to come back at 1:30. Back in the old days, we would take a lunch break, actually. We can go into closed session without a lunch. That will keep them working. So that's our intent. We're going to closed session, and we'll be back in the open at 1:30. Thank you for bearing with us.